This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There is something about Charlotte that seems to make it favorable for the development of extremely successful Christian ministries. First, there was PTL, which, thanks to television, attracted followers from around the country to their home in Fort Mill. Today, there is Elevation Church, which, although primarily local in its influence, is therefore all the more remarkable for the extent of its success. Started in 2006 by a 20-something preacher, his wife, and seven other couples, Elevation has grown into a megachurch. 14,000 members come each Sunday to one of nine campuses throughout the Charlotte area to hear Pastor Stephen Furtick's message. They recently opened a $10.5 million campus in the Lake Norman area and just yesterday announced their intention to build a new 1,200-seat campus in University City's Innovation Park. The money for all of this comes from the estimated $400,000 in donations the church receives each week. Until recently, Elevation has kept their finances secret. Indeed, much of what goes on behind the scenes at Elevation is kept under wraps, which has given some cause for concern and which has raised the interest of the media. But as yesterday's story in the Charlotte Observer may indicate, perhaps that is beginning to change. The church published a full audit of its operations on its website and was recently accepted as a member of the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, which is a respected accreditation organization which requires its member churches to adhere to strict standards of financial transparency and governance. A few months ago, we spent some time talking about Elevation's phenomenal success and its shroud of secrecy with Emily Harris, a freelance reporter who wrote a cover page article on the church in Charlotte Magazine's January issue. She is back with us this hour, along with two other reporters who have been delving into Elevation. Tim Funk covers faith and values in the pages of the Charlotte Observer, and Stuart Watson is an investigative reporter for NBC Charlotte. Thank you all for being here. Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks.
You? Great to be back.
Good to have you back. In your January cover story in Charlotte Magazine, you reported that volunteers and employees at Elevation Church were sworn to secrecy about the church's operations. How do you explain their first-time publication, then, of this audit that they had done for the church that Tim reported on yesterday in The Observer?
Well, there's two things about what they posted that is interesting in relation to the secrecy. The first thing is that it's the volunteers and the staff that are signing those contracts, and obviously a release about financials is coming from the very top, not from someone lower down at Elevation. And the people at the very top are the ones who are deciding what's released and when, and also are the ones that are asking for the secrecy from others. The second thing is that while they did release the audit, if you look at other financial documents that they've released, there's really not a ton that is new. They have previously released these sort of pie charts that show percentages going to outreach, percentages going to salary and staff. And so while it is something new that they've put out, I don't know that we've gotten a ton more information that they other than what they've already released before.
Because I read your article yesterday, I got the impression that the opposite was true, that for the first time ever, unlike the glossy brochures that they put out that tell you how they're spent the money they're collecting and how they're spending it, that this was more of a full disclosure. Not so?
Well, I don't know about full disclosure, but I think it's a step in that direction of some disclosure. I think that, you know, hey, they watch television, they read the stories too, and they know that you know, people have questions out there and that their image is at stake. And I think that they are building all these sites around town, and they need to make sure they're not some place that people stop coming to because it's become too controversial. So, I mean, in the audit we reported on, there was a very interesting line that said, contributions can be impacted, especially in the short term, if the church's lead pastor were unable to perform his duty. So they know that this church is about Stephen Furtick to a large degree, and so I think they're trying to get a seal of approval and from accreditation agencies and get about their business and hopefully...
Well, when you consider that the 9 campuses that they operate mm-hmm. in Charlotte and the one in Toronto, mm-hmm. the reason people come is to watch Pastor Stephen Furtick. He can't be at 9 or 10 places at once on Sunday. He's on television at these satellite locations. It is all about him, isn't it?
Exactly. And he has many more followers on Twitter. By any metric, he is the church.
Yeah.
He is written into what's called the code that the church was founded on, a vision that God gave Pastor Stephen. And that's how he's referred to, not as Stephen, not as Pastor Furtick, not as Reverend Furtick, Pastor Stephen. And Pastor Stephen sells the books, Pastor Stephen gives the talks, Pastor Stephen gets the followers, Pastor Stephen puts the butts in the seats, and Pastor Stephen brings the bucks.
What's wrong with that?
Well, it depends on what situation you come from. I've approached it as an investigative reporter. Tim's a religion reporter. And Emily's a magazine reporter, a writer. You can approach it from inside the church, in which people have a theological problem with one pastor being sort of the ordained one, the visionary. So you could have a long discussion with people in the evangelical world about that.
There's a history of that in the evangelical world. All of these big mega churches, all of the
doesn't make it right.
All of the TV ministries that we've had over the years are all founded on
doesn't make it right
personalities.
Doesn't make it right, and the outside way.
But Christianity was founded on a personality.
It was founded on one. Do we have a new religion?
It is, and that because it is founded on one personality, sure. And I think that sometimes, fair or not, that's where Elevation gets some blowback, is when I've talked to folks that go to other churches that have mixed feelings about Elevation. They say, you know, the purpose of my church and my faith and my life as a Christian is to follow Jesus. And that is what it's all about. I'm following Jesus so I, in turn, can be closer to God. And what some of those critics then say when they look at Elevation is that they believe that Elevation is more about following Stephen.
Well, I am much more comfortable.
I don't know
if I could talk to outside the church. If you look at it as an organization, which is what I do, look at it like Carolina's healthcare systems, like the United Way, like Samaritan's Purse. The way it is structured, when you have one person who has profound influence in picking his own board, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want that at Duke Energy. You wouldn't want it at Carolina Healthcare Systems. You wouldn't want the CEO picking the board. Is that a healthy organization? Is the CEO acting in the best interest of the whole entity, or is acting in his own best interest?
Let me play devil's advocate and ask a fundamental question. If you are a member, a volunteer, an attendee at Elevation Church, and you're going there because you like the message and you like Pastor Stephen and you enjoy the experience and you feel fulfilled by being there, what do you care about what other churches say about you or reporters say about you or other people say
about you? There are more people at stake than the people who go to Elevation. It is not just about where they elect to spend their money.
But I do think we need to pay some attention to the people that go there. I mean, a lot of people go there. This is one of the fastest growing churches in the country. And I think it's because this pastor is sort of this incredible combination of I think, pretty orthodox Christian message. I mean,
Southern Baptist.
Jesus, Southern Baptist. He named one of his kids after Billy Graham. But it's wrapped in this sort of modern, hip, pop culture savvy presentation. They have multimedia. They have all these sites.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, I'm not saying anything's wrong with it. I'm just saying I'm trying to get to why I think a lot of people, he speaks their language. They come out and he may quote the Bible, but he may also quote a TV show or a movie.
To say there's an incredible amount of churn. So when you look at the numbers, there's a fair amount of churn going on there.
But let me ask you, 'cause I know you talk to a lot of Elevation Church members in the course of writing your story. How are they impacted by the kind of negativity or the allusion to negativity that we're getting here? Because sometimes the questions raised by the media are viewed as being negative simply because the question has been asked. Not that the question wants a negative answer, just that the question has been asked. Do these people, are they affected by the questions? Do they have their own questions? Are they turned off by the questions? Are they turned off by the fact that there are no answers forthcoming? What's their reaction?
So what we've seen are a couple different reactions. The first one that I've heard from people are ones that do feel a little mixed and say, you know, I love this church, I love this pastor. I feel that my relationship with Christ has deepened since I've started going here. But that I do feel a little funny about what's going on with the money. And some of them say, you know what? There's an expression I like that's called, is the juice worth the squeeze? All right. And they sort of say, I might not like all of this, but I'm still going to say that it's worth it for me to go here.
But the money is coming from the people you're talking about.
The money is coming from the people.
So
and
if
Tim
they're
made
uncomfortable about the
that.
Money, why do they continue to give the money? Just come to the church.
Sure.
What we've written about, which I find is very interesting, and I think it's pretty unusual, is that you have 14,000 people coming in. They give $400,000 a week, and they have almost no say in where that money goes or how it's spent. And you know, this is one of the most generous churches in Charlotte. They give a lot of money to charity. They just give $300,000.
I don't know about that in the
per capita.
Wait
a minute. Let me finish. And yet this board that we talked about is all out-of-town preachers. There's no local sort of checks and balances. And I think that's something that people are beginning to ask questions about.
We're talking about the phenomenon that is the mystery that is Elevation Church on Charlotte Talks here this morning on WFAE. So, Stuart, you were going to say.
Well, I just don't know about that. I know that, first of all, the audit can be taken by the critics as spin, that this is to, you know, get your position out there to make it look like you've got the equivalent of the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval.
Well, what about that Good Housekeeping? That's the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability. Are they in on the game here?
Go back to their history. They were founded by Billy Graham in response to PTL and others, in response to Swaggart. There was a series of scandals. And so Billy Graham and others wanted people to know that when you give your money to a church, that it is not being squandered on gold faucets. And so that's the reason they formed it, to have some accountability. Now, the people I talk to in the evangelical world, Warren Cole Smith lives here, writes for World Magazine, writes for a Christian audience, writes for an evangelical audience, refers to the ECFA as, you know, something of a paper tiger. He says that it doesn't really have, they don't have the ability to smack down organizations that don't have transparency or accountability.
But they do have the ability to not give the church their imprimatur.
Yes, that's true. And so they meet certain standards, and what Warren Cole Smith described this as baby steps. A step,
Warren,
but baby
Warren
steps.
Warren and some others have problems with Billy Graham. I mean, I think there is an element in the evangelical community that is maybe a little far to the right and doesn't buy into ECFA. But I talked to Dan Busby, the executive director. He said what we're mostly about is to make sure these boards are looking out for the congregation and the church and not just the pastor. They want to know, and you know, the church gave over the data about how much Stephen Furtick makes. They won't tell us. Mm-hmm. They won't tell even their members, but they did tell this group.
Did they give over all of it?
So this group has worked for the U.S. Senate to try to cut down on the prosperity gospel abuses and things like that.
I think what we can lose sight of or forget when working on this story is that it really is a story about faith. And people that give money to the church and say that they feel under attack or that they don't have a problem with where the money is going, some of these people tell me that they believe that Elevation is reaching a lot of people that were otherwise not Christians or not having a relationship with Christ.
True?
And so if they give money and they see that result, I think that then they feel at peace not asking questions. And, you know, part of the sort of deal of having a church in America, right, means that we have freedom of religion. And we're also a capitalist country. So to a certain extent, they can pray and preach the way that they want to and make a buck doing it.
20 seconds.
I don't want to interrupt. My story is not about faith. I am not writing about anyone's faith. I am writing about money and tax-exempt status and public policy. And do we want to give tax-exempt status to someone who makes themselves extraordinarily wealthy doing it?
And we'll get into that as we go through the hour here. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about Elevation Church today with three reporters who are covering various different aspects of the church's existence here in Charlotte. Emily Harris kicked us all off with a feature cover article in Charlotte Magazine's January issue called On God's Stage, Elevation Church. She is with us. Tim Funk covers faith and values every week in the Charlotte Observer. And Stuart Watson is an investigative reporter for NBC Charlotte. Now, Emily Harris has covered this from a pretty wide-ranging point of view, talking to people who attend the church, talking to people who work for the church, talking about what the church is all about to the people who attend, and it's about, they feel it's about faith. Stuart Watson has covered this as an investigative reporter would. He's looking into the money issues and whether or not the money is being responsibly used, given the fact that it is a tax-exempt organization. And Tim Funk looks at this from another different perspective, and you wanted to talk about
that. Well, I think we look at faith and money. Okay. I think, you know, like every church in Charlotte, I think people at Elevation, the people that go there, the people that run it, would say that God has something to do with this. Now, we need to respect that and talk to the people who go there, but we also need to understand that this is a very marketing-savvy organization. It's very much into branding. I think Furta got a degree in marketing in school. They have 9 sites. They stay away from controversial issues, unlike other Southern Baptist churches. I don't think they said much about Amendment 1 because, you know, that would divide that congregation.
Well, that's
young congregation, and it would cut into their numbers, and they're all about the numbers. Well, they say that goes back to the loaves and the fishes,
yeah,
but, and
Southern,
Billy Graham.
Because I asked you when you were here in January, Emily, what are they? Are they a liberal church? Because you look at this guy; he's a rock star. I mean, he is a rock star, and I've seen his television show, which appears sometimes after Saturday Night Live on NBC Charlotte.
Not anymore. He pulled that.
I wonder what happened.
Ask some hard questions.
But it's a rock. He's a rock star presence, and that's not meant to be a criticism. It's just a fact, and I think he makes that. That's part of his deal. He wants to be that. Where was I going with this? I can't remember where I was
about
going.
Whether they're liberal or
Amendment
conservative?
One. Yes, but they're not liberal. They are Southern Baptists in their association. But he did not and has not gone out on this social limb that some of the Southern Baptist churches have.
That's correct, and they are definitely what we consider a conservative church in the Southern Baptist sense. They believe that marriage is for only between a man and a woman, that sex is only for marriage. I've been to lots of sermons at Elevation, and there's a lot of talk about preserving virginity and viewing that as a very pure thing to do, talking about, you know, not listening to certain types of music or reading certain types of books, talking even about the dangers of having a phone connected to the internet because you might, you know, use that to look at porn instead of at Bible verses. Huh. So they are definitely completely conservative. Now, what makes it very sort of fresh and modern, if you will, is that they combine those conservative values with the Fendi sunglasses and the Gucci jeans and all of that stuff.
And he likes to hang with celebrities.
He likes to hang with celebrities
a
lot, and he likes to post photos of himself a lot.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
There's not, but that's all part of the vibe.
This would be a very different conversation, and perhaps we wouldn't even be having this conversation beyond the fact that it's a phenomenally successful organization. It just is. There's no way around it. With 14,000 people coming to church every Sunday at 9 different campuses, it's phenomenally successful. They're having this conversation primarily because of the fact that we don't know anything about their financial situation, and they don't make it
known. About the house. The house triggered the conversation.
Okay. And we'll get into that in a second. But you said, I mean, they told you, the chief financial officer of Elevation Church told you, Tim, that there are no secrets at Elevation Church. Well, that's simply not true on the face of it, is it?
I'm going to leave that up to other people. I mean, we report what people say, and then we go and look at it ourselves. I mean, I think I would like to know a lot more about what's going on there. I would like to sit down with Pastor Furtick. I interviewed him in 2008, but he won't talk to the media since in recent years, and I don't know why.
You know, and I would argue that we're having this conversation. Yes, is it about faith? Yes, is it about money? I would say, though, that we're all here and that it's become so touchy because of the taxes, is that whether you're Christian or not Christian or belong to that church or not belong to that church, you know, I'm working on my taxes myself this week. And when we see someone getting a pass or getting an advantage when it comes to money that we're not getting, it is only natural for anyone to ask, is that fair? And Elevation has a ton of money, and they do get a lot of passes on taxes.
As does every other church in the country.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about what the differences are.
Okay.
Few other churches, to his extent, use the nonprofit as a platform to his immensely profitable career as an author and a speaker.
How do we know? How do we know it's immensely profitable?
Look at the house. He said the books paid for the house. He walked that back.
The house is 16,000 square feet.
Well, they started 16,000. He said, no, that's not right. It's 8,000. Final numbers, Union County, 10,000 livable, right. 5,000 unheated.
Yeah. All right. On 10 acres.
Right. And 7.5 baths, 4-car garage.
It's a big house.
Yes.
But, you know, what I would say is every church is tax exempt. But mm-hmm. what I found interesting lately was the extent to which the church was kind of – the resources of the church were used to help sell his book. They had a whole day, Elevation Network, their radio show, where – he was on. He was interviewing people who were trying to sell their books and their movies. And if you go to their website, there's a place to go to buy it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And that is a tax-exempt organization. And yet, you know, he's going to be making
some money. It goes beyond that. The publisher, one of the large Random House, a division of Random House, pays the church to market the book. And then, in addition, the church promotes the book. So the church is a vehicle for his career.
But it's also, you know, I don't want to be – I'm not a defender of the church. I'm not a critic of the church. I'm just a reporter. But, I mean, a lot of people do like his sermons and his books. So I think we need to keep in mind there's a lot of people go there that get a lot out of it. And then there's a lot of people out there who really have legitimate questions.
You have the bloggers
who say everything's bad, and then you have the people that go there that say everything's good. Our job is to show the gray, you know, show what's going on.
If you are a pure author – if you just write books, then God bless you. And if you're a pure minister and write books that benefit the church, then God bless you. It's this mixing, Tim.
You've read all the books.
I have.
How many books are there?
His third book just came out.
Okay, so I was going to say he's a prolific author, but three books does not make one prolific. Two of those books have been classified as New York Times bestsellers. And as I understand it, one of those books was a New York Times bestseller for about 32 seconds. But nonetheless, it made the New York Times bestseller list, which qualifies him to say that about his books. Okay, the dagger means that churches are buying
bulk sales.
Bulk sale.
Yes.
And they're buying the book at his author discount, and he claims not to be getting royalties on the books that the church buys in bulk. So what's wrong with that?
That's a good question. Now, I think in fairness, let's look at it from first the perspective of people that go to church there, which is that what they see is, you know, if the church is serving as a marketing vehicle for Pastor Furtick's books, then they say, fantastic,
yes,
because we're reaching all these people,
yes,
that are now going to love Christ as much as I do. Where other people say this isn't quite right is that it seems that the pastor is getting, of course, more out of the book sales than the churches. What we don't know is how much does the pastor give back to the church?
But he said he doesn't get anything from them, does he?
But here's the sleight of hand that's happening. The most money that he gets paid is paid up front in advance. So the publisher knows that they will be selling books, cost or not. The publisher will be making money on books to people who are at Elevation. They know they're making that money up front. So that goes into the check that they give him as the advance.
How many books has he sold?
That's a great question. And unlike movies, and even unlike television, the metrics for books are squishy. The best one I found is a Nielsen book scan, and it showed 60,000 copies for Greater, which did not make the New York Times bestseller list, but fewer than 30,000 for the subsequent book, which did make the New York Times bestseller list. So there are lots of questions both there and at Mars Hill Church in Seattle and other churches about gaming the New York Times bestseller system.
And that is
not for selling books, but for selling the speaking fees. And it's not something that a lot of pastors do. It's not something that people who, stock and trade.
I think that you would be surprised. You know, and I also, you know, I am a freelancer. I do some work in the publishing industry as part of my freelance work. Publishing is a big business, and there are absolutely all sorts of ways to game the system, but they don't really consider it gaming the system. They call that business.
Is that illegal?
No, it's not illegal.
Is it immoral?
Well, that's for everyone to decide for themselves, right?
All right. And since we don't really know how many books you sell, I've talked to a lot of authors who say they don't make money on the books that they write and sell, unless they are an Oprah Book Club choice. But he says that he's made enough money to pay for this house. It's a $1.7 million house.
He also gets a housing allowance. I mean, I think –
which you didn't mention to begin with.
I think those are the kinds of details we'd like to know about. But, you know, frankly, it's hard in this town to find out what any pastor makes, although you can if you're dogged about it. Certain denominational lists are out there. But, you know, David Chadwick's not going to tell you how much he makes. But the difference is there are people at his church that set his salary and know how much he makes. At Elevation, nobody really knows what he makes except these out-of-town pastors and a few financial people.
Is it our business to know?
Yes, since he's a tax-exempt status and since he's using the tax-exempt status to get it. Talk to people. See, I guess I've got to be the odd man out here and ask. But if you talk to the people in the Freedom From Religion Foundation, these are the atheists and agnostics who have sued over these issues of certain tax-exempt statuses of the churches. They've sued over the housing allowance, which is tax-free money. They pay Social Security on it, they pay Medicare on it, but they don't pay income taxes on it. So the bigger the house, the more the money they get. That's where the taxpayers get involved. That's where it's not whether I'm a Christian or whether I'm a hater or anything else. I'm a taxpayer.
You writes about a mentor that Stephen Furtick has, and he seems to be following that mentor's playbook in terms of how he's constructed the financial aspect of his life, including the purchase of the house and how it was financed. This mentor, Stuart, I think you wrote about this. Is he also a pastor of a megachurch?
Right, it was Ed Young Jr.
Are there stories in his local media asking these same questions?
Oh, absolutely. WFAA in Dallas, our sister station, is asking the same questions.
There's stories in every local market about all of these pastors. And sometimes it blows over, and sometimes we see pastors go broke. And I think that that's what people are wondering with Elevation, is it going to hit that tipping point where a church collapses or a pastor goes broke, or is it just going to kind of blow over? And a lot of whether it will blow over or not will actually come from Elevation and not from the media. It will be about how much Elevation discloses and how much money they give away and the goodwill they create by that.
You know, to get back to the tax exempt thing, this could become a big issue because there's a federal court out of Wisconsin last year that ruled that these housing allowances given to pastors, parsonage allowances they call them, are unconstitutional, and that
they're not unconstitutional.
They're unconstitutional in being able to take tax credits from that. And this judge said it violates the First Amendment of the Constitution, which says no establishment of religion clause. But, you know, that's got to go way up the line, probably to the Supreme Court. But it's an issue that's being talked about out there. You know, should churches get all this tax-exempt protection when some pastors and others are making some money?
And that's a completely fair question.
He is not alone, and we've reported – people think I'm picking on Stephen Furtick, but David Cerullo, Inspirational Network, $2 million salary, yeah. $325,000
several houses.
Tax-free.
We've written about that, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Todd Kuntz, prosperity preacher, lives out in a $1 million condo off Providence Road. You know, the church owns the condo. You got a $3 million mansion for the Bishop of the United House of Prayer for All People. He doesn't even live in it a month out of the year. We've reported on that.
And then you also have Rick Warren, who, because he became extraordinarily wealthy through his books, decided to stop taking a salary from his church and also gave all of the amount of money from his old salaries from prior years back to the church.
Talking about Elevation Church and its various different aspects and the various different questions that have arisen surrounding it here on Charlotte Talks here on WFAE. What would you say the distinguishing characteristic of this church is from a churchgoer? What are these people getting out of this that they did not get out of traditional worship? Or why are they coming in the first place if they have not been churched people in the past?
It's immensely entertaining.
I think a lot of them went to church as children and maybe were turned off by sort of this churchy culture. And I think at Elevation, they're able to get that traditional message that I think resonates with them. But they also are in an environment where there's, you know, hard-driving rock, Christian rock music. There's they have put on these Hollywood-quality videos, this multimedia approach. They can go to 9 different sites. It's trendy. It's hip. But it speaks to them, I think, on a soul level, too. So,
And one thing that they have done well is, while obviously they're trying very hard to grow as fast as possible, they also have managed, despite that fast growth, to sell a message of being exclusive, that, you know, if you are part of Elevation, you're following this code, we do things this way. You'll hear, if you go to the services, a lot about Elevation is this, Elevation is that. And so it appeals to somebody who wants to feel perhaps more part of a club or an organization, or that sort of branding identity that you don't get as much at a lot of other churches.
Well, there's no cross at Elevation.
Mike, you started by saying there's something about Charlotte, and I would say that something is the IT church. And you have been around. You got a few gray hairs like me. You remember when the IT church was a big pink church, or IT church was over here. And then you'll see a certain amount of people of a certain age just flow from one to the other. Elevation Church is the current IT church.
Yes, but it's, as an IT church, it is the most successful IT since PTL. And PTL was not a church. It was a ministry that was on television internationally on the satellite.
I take your word for it.
You weren't here?
I was not here.
I mean, but you're saying you're taking my word for what?
For this being the most successful since PTL, since I wasn't here at PTL.
Okay, well, PTL was internationally successful.
Yeah. You know, what I'm finding is, I talk to people in the faith community who say, on the one hand, you know, I don't really, this is not my cup of tea, but I have to say that they give more money, they give more volunteers to charities around town. And then in the next breath, they'll say, but I'm worried about this, and is it like PTL? There's nothing, I've seen nothing to suggest that they're you know, doing the kinds of things PTL did, but there is that wariness out there.
And they're not trying to be international at the moment. They're not putting themselves on satellite television around the country. They're not. They don't have phone banks.
They're on television.
Yeah, I would consider them.
I think they probably like to go to different.
They don't have their own network, but they're on television.
When we come back, I do want to talk about their charitable donations to the city, because they do seem, on the surface, to be substantial, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Tim Funk from the Charlotte Observer. He's the faith and values reporter for the paper. Emily Harris is a freelance reporter who wrote the cover story in the January issue of Charlotte magazine called On God's Stage, Elevation Church. And Stuart Watson, an investigative reporter for NBC Charlotte. All three of these reporters have been covering Elevation Church and Pastor Stephen Furtick for some time now. And we're talking about some of the questions that have arisen as a result of their remarkable secrecy. I have a couple of things that have come in while we've been talking. Joshua on Twitter says, I've been an Elevation Church volunteer for 5 years and leader coordinator for 3 campuses. I have never and will never sign a paper telling me how to talk about my church. Now, you reported, Emily, that volunteers have to sign this secrecy document, that they will not divulge the secrets of the church.
Correct.
So he hasn't done that, he says.
So he says, sure. And so are you asking, do I think he's making something up? You know, I don't know. I've seen copies of it myself, and I've also had people who have reached out to me over emails saying, I'd really like to talk to you, but I have signed something.
Mm-hmm. We ran a copy of it online. I'm not sure.
Is this an anomaly?
Well, I'm not sure everybody there signs it. The church says that this is like doing background checks. They especially do with people that work with children, for example.
Right.
But some people think it does go beyond that, and it has a muffling.
Mentions finances.
It mentions the money. It doesn't say don't talk about the church.
Interestingly, it mentions the biblical. Admonitions against spreading gossip and things like that. So it sets it in a biblical
or facts.
Another person who identifies themselves as a member of Elevation says, are these guys going to talk about the partnerships the church has in the community? 12% of all the money that comes into Elevation goes back out to nonprofits in the Charlotte region, and Love Week produces 14,000 plus hours of volunteering in the community. And I do want to talk about what I consider to be, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm sheltered and I don't know what other churches give, but I think it's a remarkable amount of money that they have given away, $11 million to charity, $475,000 of that to Crisis Assistance Ministry alone. How does that compare to what other churches do?
I think that's probably more than most. And, of course, I think they have a lot more money. Well, they also supply volunteers.
How long does it take to raise $11 million if you're bringing in $400,000 a week?
Well, in the aggregate, and first off, you know, I've come off as a hater, so I want to say that it's great that they give money. The biggest testimony to Elevation is if somebody goes to Elevation Church and changes their lives and is reconnected to family and is no longer self-destructive, that's a wonderful thing. And that is the primary object of any church, and people have had that happen. They've had genuine changes in their lives, and you cannot speak ill of that. That is the primary purpose of the church, and it is a wonderful testimony to that church.
You wrote in your article in January extensively about Stephen Furtick's early life and how this is something that he has aspired to be and to do since he was a child. He used to go into the woods and pretend preach to the animals. I don't know, but he practiced because he felt a calling to this. And anybody who feels a calling to anything, I'm sure, Stuart, you stood up with a hairbrush and looked in the mirror and pretended you were a reporter.
It was ugly.
So this is something he's wanted to do for a long time. Could he be hurting himself by not being more forthcoming? Because he's been so successful at this.
He's been so successful. And if you look at his history, it's clear that he's been incredibly driven, incredibly hardworking, and coming from a place where he feels passionately about sharing the message of the Bible. Could he be hurting himself? I mean, that's the sort of thing that, you know, that we ask about in the media that becomes like a focus group issue. He's clearly being himself, and not everybody is going to like him being himself. And I have
How much of this has to do with that? That this is a remarkably successful personality who is on television, who is an author, who has 14,000 people who love him, who come to his services every Sunday, and he is, as a result of this, as anybody would be who's that successful, he's wealthy.
Yes, and
how
he's
much
also,
of it is jealousy?
Well, a lot of it is hard work, and a lot of it is talent. He's a superb preacher.
Yes,
and kind of combines the old school with new school. He connects with people. There's a lot of rhetoric. There's a lot of rhetorical devices going on there. There's a lot of persuasive speaking. He is very good at it. He's practiced at it, but I don't want to dismiss his natural talent for it. He's really good at what he does. What I raise questions about is, and a lot of money flows through a nonprofit religious, you know, through a black box to him and around that black box to him because of its nonprofit status. That's my question.
If this were not a church, if this were a nonprofit charitable organization,
United Way,
would these questions be answered?
Yes.
Was at the United
Absolutely.
Way, and we asked them, and we the being too. WCNC and the Charlotte Observer.
Is the fact that this is a church or is positioned as a church part of the problem here, because people get really nervous when you go after a church?
Well, there are three organizations that investigative reporters know of that sort of kind of try to act like the Better Business Bureau or the Consumers Union for churches. There is the Trinity Foundation, Ole Anthony in Dallas, Texas. There is Ministry Watch, founded by a fellow who lived here in Matthews, still lives here part of the year. And then there's the ECFA, which is sort of the institutional. And so I have been to each of those to look at this. And what the fellow with Ministry Watch said, Rusty Leonard is his name, is he said, a church does not have to give you one bean of information. So during the WFAE fund drive, I can go to GuideStar.org, look up WFAE, look up NPR, and see where my money goes. You cannot do that to the same degree
with any
at a church, with any church.
So you may have already answered Michael's question in his email. He says, why bother this man so much when he is trying to help people? Billy Graham is not a poor man, and people never say a bad word about him. He's allowed to make money in other ways. Just because the man goes a little crazy with the size of his home shouldn't be a reason to condemn him. Do we know if he comes from money, and that is how he lives so well? I understand that the thought of a preacher gouging his parish and being a fraud and a liar, but from what I have seen, the man is just being blessed for his work. If you want someone who is a fraud and thief, for sure, look at Benny Hinn and Oral Roberts.
I think that the fact that
let me just say that's the caller's opinion.
The fact that nobody that goes to that church has any kind of leadership role, doesn't know where the money's going, doesn't have, you know, this board or out-of-town people. I think that's what makes it different, and I think that's partly why we're raising
the
questions.
The Charlotte Observer did a great report on Franklin Graham double-dipping at Samaritan's Purse and at the Billy Graham Evangelical Association. The reason they were able to do the report is because they submit 990s, because they are ministries and not churches, and that is the difference between Billy Graham and Stephen Furtick.
And you do know where he came from, because you reported on where he came from. Where does he come from?
Sure. He comes from Monk's Corner, which is a small town about 45 minutes outside of Charleston. You know, questions, did he grow up from money? You know, what is he doing with all this money? I think that there's two issues there that make people sort of nuts. One, absolutely, there's jealousy. How could there not be? But the second one that I hear a lot from folks at other churches is, you know, the question that is fair to ask, and we see this with how the Pope has become so popular. The question is, should a leader of a church, knowing that Jesus focused on the poor, that Jesus was focused on feeding people, clothing people, real bare bones stuff, how can someone who's seen the plight of the needy want to spend so much money on themselves?
Well,
it is his money, and it's fair to do.
The Catholic Church is the richest organization in the world.
But the individuals...
The Catholic Church is very wealthy, but let's look at it as for what's happened in the past year with Pope Francis, which is all of a sudden a lot of people are excited about the Catholic Church, even if they aren't members. And what they're excited about is seeing the Pope say, I do not want the fancy quarters. I do not want the fancy shoes, the fancy car. They see the Pope kissing a man who has a significant disfigurement. They see the Pope saying, too many church leaders are narcissists. This is really pretty edgy
stuff.
And the
Bishop of Bling.
It's really interesting. And there was a woman who works for the Washington Post, an editor there, wrote a really brilliant column in the past year that says, if you like Pope Francis, you'll love Jesus. And it's because the Pope is sending that message of,
you know,
don't Catholic like materialism.
Priests, Catholic pastors in this town, I think they make like $2,600 a month. I mean, they're not poor, but, you know.
Well, they have
so there is a lot
housing
of
housing is provided.
Exactly, and right. Food and probably. But nobody's getting rich going into the clergy.
Reverend Hunter Roddy emails, I can only speak for the Presbyterian Church. All pastors' salaries must be voted on by the congregation at a pre-announced congregational meeting each year. Salary, housing allowance, medical coverage, continuing education, et cetera, are all published and available. That is not the case.
Elevation doesn't even include the rules and bylaws. It's not the case in Charlotte.
It's not the case with a lot of mega churches. Most churches have local checks and balances and elevation.
Also, Maggie on Facebook, as a pastor, she says, as a pastor, nothing makes me squirm more than pastors like the Elevation pastor who take such grave advantage of their positions. There are a world of small church pastors who depend on the housing allowance to break even or even to make it. You can count pastors like Furtick on your hands, but remember the countless pastors serving and fully accountable. And the Presbyterian Church USA, our salaries are posted by the denomination. You had a lengthy one-on-one conversation with Stephen Furtick, and given the impression of the media, given the impression the media has given us of the secrecy that surrounds the church and its leadership, did it surprise you that he would meet with you?
No, he's trying to talk me into not doing a story. But
On
him, his position as the minister, and specifically on the so-called spontaneous baptisms, but which we did after waiting a prolonged period of time for him to get back to us, which they never did. But we ended that meeting. He prayed for me and pulled me in for a hug.
You've met with him.
Yeah, I interviewed him in 2008, over a couple of days, I think. And, you know, the story came out, and, you know, the world didn't end. So I don't know why he's not speaking to me or anybody else anymore.
You did not meet with him. Did you ask to meet with him?
I asked to meet with him. I didn't meet him. I did get to spend some quality time with Tanya Bendixson, who does a lot of outreach for the church. And, of course, heard him speak and read his books and attended services at all the campuses. I think, though, what we want to do when we look at this church is to try not to make it so black and white, you know, to really view it from a gray area.
You offered him unedited airtime.
Right.
People should, who are not in the business should know that when a reporter goes in with a camera, what you see on television is the 13-second soundbite after a three-hour interview. But you offered him a chance to be unedited, and he turned you down.
Right. I said that we could do the 30-minute program on Sunday mornings with him, but it would be a conversation, even if the conversation began with him saying to me that he thought I was unfair.
Mm-hmm. And he does think you're unfair.
Yes.
Why?
I think they had some specific things. I think they don't think that I play up enough how much they do in the community, how much they give back, that I'm only after the negative. And part of that has to do with the investigative reporter doesn't pull you over to give you a thumbs up.
We have asked him to be on this program, and he's turned us down. Is there any reason for him to say yes to anybody?
I've talked a lot to his financial
Corbett,
and he's the head. He's the chief financial officer. He's talked to me a lot, but I've requested also time with the Pastor Furtick, and if he's listening, we'd love to do that interview, and I think the other ones would too.
We're talking about Elevation Church on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Emily?
You know, the United Way was brought up, and I did a story last year about our local United Way, and I think that the story I'm going to tell you is a great example of sort of managing these things, which is that when the big crisis and scandal happened with the United Way, about all the high salaries and the perks. What happened after that when Jane McIntyre came in to lead the United Way is they started opening all of their books. And when I did a story on it, they told me that the first year the media was all over coming to it. And the second year when they had this nice event for the media with the books, you know, people came. And then the media stopped coming. And every year they'd say, you know, come look at our books. And basically,
I think that's a little unfair. A, we broke that story with the Observer, so I was intimately involved in it. B, our general manager used to serve on the United Way board last year. And C, we still go and we still – and I think you're right, Emily, that the United Way is an example of something that changed. But you can't expect the investigative reporter to broke the story to then come around and be like a fundraiser for you. That's my own.
Which is not what I'm saying at all. But I am saying that once they started really being open, that after a while, the investigative reporter that's looking for the meaty story is saying, well, the story is not here anymore.
Right.
Observer's done a much better job of that. They've stuck around and they've talked about where they are with fundraising, et cetera. But you're absolutely right. The accountability at the United Way did a 180.
But in the modern media environment, I think that I know newspapers want to be watchdogs. That's one of our big jobs. So we did do that Franklin Graham story where he was taking two full-time salaries. Yeah. And I think that's what we're doing with Elevation. We're just trying to say, you know, what's going on here and ask questions.
Let me close on a couple of emails. Paul says, I'm a devout evangelical Christian. I am completely comfortable with and in agreement with the close scrutiny that this panel is undertaking, and I thank you all for shedding light on this subject. However, I'm reminded of my days when I bartended my way through college, and my very best regular customers were a group of executives from the regional chapter of the Red Cross. These guys made mid-six-figure salaries as public servants, and I found it equally hypocritical. Does this panel extend their nonprofit scrutiny and criticisms to all nonprofit organizations? Hello, hospitals.
The Observer.
Holy was a cow. Pulitzer finalist, Ames Alexander, Karen Garlow, for its stories on the hospitals.
Joseph on Facebook hospitals. Says, if it looks like an entertainment business, is run like an entertainment business, and makes money like an entertainment business, it should be taxed like one. Tim Funk, faith and values reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Stuart Watson, investigative reporter for NBC Charlotte, and Emily Harris, a freelance reporter who wrote the January cover article in Charlotte Magazine, which you can still get online, On God's Stage, Elevation Church. Thank you all.